You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I see what you're up to there, Milwaukee, and I gotta say, it seems like a bad idea. Milwaukee, city government there, is trying to shut down a gas station. 35th Hometown is the name of the gas station. Because someone, without the permission of the gas station's owner, filmed a down-and-dirty gonzo porn in the aisles of the convenience store chunk of the gas station at 3 o'clock in the morning. An amateur porn actor named Frederick Allen entered the store in the middle of the night with a female companion. Jalissa Castrodel, she's a reporter at Vice, not the female companion, a reporter at Vice, to be perfectly clear. Jalissa Castrodel says that Allen, who was wearing a bathrobe, dances around in the video, strokes himself for the camera, and then shrugs off his bathrobe, gets on his knees, and bones the woman from behind, looking over his shoulder into the camera, quote, with an expression that says, "Can you believe I'm doing this beside the starburst?" The video, posted to Pornhub, has been viewed more than 700,000 times. And a couple of dozen people, with nothing better to do after enjoying that video, signed a petition calling for 35th Hometown to be closed. And an elected official, an actual elected official with nothing better to do after watching the video, took up their cause. And what Milwaukee District 7 Alderman Khalif Rainey told Fox 6 Now News had me convinced that this was a comedy piece out of The Onion at first. But nope, it's real. Alderman Rainey, who is leading the push to put the guy who owns 35th Hometown out of business, actually said this into a microphone. "Under my watch, I won't allow it. Keep in mind, it was filmed right next to the chips and across from the sunflower seeds." Oh no, those poor chips. And won't someone please think of the sunflower seeds? I want to make it clear that I do not rise now in defense of Frederick Allen, amateur porn star. He's a convicted felon, Castrodel reports at Vice, who's been charged with second-degree sexual assault of a child after a woman told him her 15-year-old daughter appeared in two of his videos. Those charges were dropped after a witness refused to testify. So, yeah, Allen doesn't sound like a good dude. But you know what I found in less than 5 minutes of searching on Pornhub? Amateur porn videos shot on buses and subways, gonzo porn videos shot in big box stores, in airports, in theme parks, in airplanes, in Airbnbs, amateur porn shot at world famous tourist sites. I didn't find anyone getting Eiffel Towered at the Eiffel Tower, but I did find the Eiffel Tower. And amateur porn shot in so many hotel rooms, recognizable hotel chains. And in one case, a porn shot in my favorite hotel in the world. Quick shout out to the Maritime Hotel, my home away from home in New York City's Chelsea neighborhood. There's also some gay porn out there that was shot, or so its makers claim, in the Vatican. Basically, wherever people go with their genitals and their smartphones, and there's really nowhere people don't go with their genitals and their smartphones, someone at some point has made a porno there and uploaded it to the internet. So shutting down places where someone shot a little gonzo porn, yeah, let's just say that seems like the slipperiest of slopes to me. A pretty luby slope, in fact. Because if the whole world goes the way of Milwaukee, if officials start closing down businesses where people made porn videos without the permission of the owners, to say nothing of shutting down airlines and hotel chains and world religions, pretty soon there won't be anywhere for people to get gas or get a bed or get religion. Personally, gonzo porn shot in gas stations, I don't want to see that, not interested. But do you know what I would like to see, what I am personally interested in seeing? Milwaukee District 7 Alderman Khalif Rainey's internet browser history. In fact, I'd like to see the internet browser histories of every member of the Milwaukee Common Council who voted to revoke the business license of Kulwant Dellen, the owner of the 35th Hometown gas station. Because I'd like to know where the porn they've been watching was shot. City officials, three aldermen, justified their decision to strip Dellen of his business license because he was in the store when it happened and didn't call the police. Which leads me to believe that no one on the Milwaukee Common Council has ever worked in a gas station or is following the news very closely. Customers do all sorts of weird shit in gas stations, and the goal of everyone behind the counter on the graveyard shift is just to get through that shift alive. Confronting a dancing man in a bathrobe in the middle of the night when there's no one else in the store? Why? Why would you do that? That could get you killed. And Alan, the dancing man in the bathrobe in the store in the middle of the night, is a black man. And if you've been following the news, well, it's possible Dylan worried that calling the police could get Alan killed. It would certainly cross my mind. Anyway, according to the testimony taken at the hearing where the license committee voted to strip Dylan of his business license, effectively shutting him down, Dylan has run 35th Hometown for 20 years without incident and has a 40-year, quote, positive track record as a small business owner in Milwaukee. And he's cooperated with the police in the past and on this case, too. Prosecutors credit him for the successful prosecution of Frederick Allen. And they voted to close the business anyway after Alderman Rainey said the two magic words, sex trafficking. No one knows that the woman in the video was trafficked, but she might have been, for all anyone knows, according to Rainey. So they voted to shut 35th Hometown down. There's a lawsuit, and 35th Hometown remains open while the decision is under appeal. But there is one detail from the testimony that leapt out at me, testimony taken before the Licenses Committee, that seems to have been overlooked by the Licenses Committee, by the Milwaukee Common Council. Quote, the man involved in the sex act, Frederick Allen, amateur porn star, has a history of doing this all over the city. So, looks like we're going to have to shut all of Milwaukee down, folks. It's the only way to keep Milwaukee safe for chips and sunflower seeds. Okay, coming up on today's show, on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of listener cues, tons of my A's, and in the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, twice as much show, no ads, more guests. You can subscribe to the Magnum at savagelovecast.com. Dr. Wednesday Martin, author of Untrue, is back to talk with us about how women's libidos really work. Spoiler, it's not the way we're told they work. All that coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by DoorDash. Get $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter the promo code SAVAGE. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Talkspace, online therapy that makes it easy to get extra mental health support. For $100 off your first month, go to Talkspace.com and use the offer code SAVAGE. Want to save money, save the planet, and look good while you're doing it? It doesn't get any better than ThredUp, the largest online consignment and thrift store. Shop over 35,000 brands at up to 90% off estimated retail. Go to ThredUp.com/SAVAGE for an extra 30% off your first order. That's ThredUp.com/SAVAGE, ThredUp.com/SAVAGE for an extra 30% off today.
Hey Dan, 32-year-old living in Europe. Just recently I got divorced. My now ex-wife and I were together for 7 years and married for 3. The relationship was really good and happy for most of the time. We lived in 4 different countries, we traveled a lot, but it unraveled in the last year and I don't think either of us really understand why. We parted on good terms and she moved out of the apartment we were living in. We didn't see each other again for a year until our court date. And during that time, we often had to email about mundane things like taxes and whatnot. Her emails were always very formal, usually without a hi or a bye. And whenever I wrote something more personal, like how I missed her or how I felt her emails were unnecessarily cold, I never got any reply. Once I saw her walking, holding hands with another guy not far from where I lived. And when I texted her asking her, was that her I saw? All she wrote back was yes. Later I learned she had moved across the road from me, and when I asked her why, she never replied. Everything was blanked. No message on my birthday, no talking to me when we saw each other in court. The pain of breaking up was enough already, I thought. I suppose what I'm asking is, am I entitled to feel angry about this, or is this normal? I keep swinging between feeling totally betrayed by her silence, when it wouldn't have taken much, in my opinion, to be distant but respectful. I accepted the relationship was over, but I wasn't expecting her to cut herself so bluntly from my life. On the other hand, I feel perhaps I'm being unfair and that I should learn to understand, as it must have been incredibly hard on her, even if it was her decision, and she's just trying to protect her own heart. But was I entitled to feel more after 7 years being married, or once the relationship is over, is it okay to act like there was never one in the first place?
Fairness really has nothing to do with it. You ask if once a relationship is over, if it's unfair to pretend there never was a relationship in the first place. That's just sometimes something someone needs to do to move past, to get through it, to heal. We talk a lot about how, you know, after a breakup, people often take a long time away from each other. There's a long period of little or no contact. And then maybe if a friendship is going to emerge out of the ruins of this relationship, they'll circle back. At some point, the universe or fate or even intentional choice will throw them back together and they will reconnect and they will tap into what they enjoyed about each other. Not the romance, not the sexual attraction, but just the ability to be comfortable with each other and intimate. And there's that shared history there. Once the anger and pain of the breakup itself and everything that was lost in the breakup has time to dissipate. But some people need to burn that off. Some people need to kind of set fire to it so they can get through it, so they can work through it, if indeed they're ever going to reconnect. So it seems to me that this marriage ended in a confusing and painful way a year ago. You would have preferred to maintain some degree of contact, to send each other messages on your birthday, to be able to exchange emails with some cordial remarks in them. And that obviously isn't what she needs or she wants. And as painful as it may be for you to acknowledge that and accept that, you have no other choice. You can't require her to send you messages on your birthday. You're entitled to your, I wouldn't say anger in a situation like this, but your disappointment maybe. You're entitled to that. There's a way you wish the breakup had unfolded or the last year had went, or a way you wish that you could interact with your wife or your now ex-wife as of very recently. And you didn't get that. Well, you don't get everything you want. You're not entitled to that. You can be sad about what you didn't get, what you hoped for, the kind of divorce you wish you had. You can be sad that you didn't get that. But I don't think you have a right to be angry. I think that better angel of your nature that's whispering in your ear that this is just where she is and what she needs now to work through this, you need to listen to that angel, not the devil on your other shoulder telling you to be angry, but the angel telling you to chill the fuck out. Maybe one day you will be in a place where you can reconnect, where you can remember the good times, where you can be civil and cordial, even friendly and mutually supportive. Until that day comes, and I don't think you should attempt to engineer that day's arrival, but until that day comes, let it go. When you see her out with someone else, don't send her an email asking if that was her that you saw out with someone else. Don't track her movements. Don't concern yourself with where she lives and how close it might be to your apartment. Just chill the fuck out. Move the fuck on. Let go of your anger. Own your disappointment. You're allowed to be disappointed. And focus on the future. A future that may or may not one day include a friendship with your ex-wife. But at the moment, in your current reality, that's not on the table and your anger can't force it onto the table.
Hi, Dan. I'm a queer woman around 30 years old living in the Pacific Northwest. A few years ago, my best friend, let's call him Kyle, was in a 3-year relationship with this person, let's call them Jordan. Kyle is a cisgendered man, but this story is really about Jordan, who now identifies as non-binary, so I'll be using they-them pronouns. But it's relevant to know that they were assigned female at birth and identified as female at the time of this story. Kyle, Jordan, and I quickly became best friends after meeting. I watched their relationship disintegrate and both confided in me regularly. It became clear that Jordan probably had borderline personality disorder, and this was the root of many of their problems. I've caught Jordan lying many times. Jordan would often fly off the handle over a small issue and would become violent toward Kyle. Kyle was also sexually frustrated because he was constantly being rejected and going 3 months at a time without sex. And Jordan would accuse him of trying to coerce them into sex if he even mentioned the subject. During the rare moments when Jordan wanted sex, Kyle was not allowed to say no. Jordan would hit him and scream at him for daring to turn them down when they were finally in the mood. Jordan told me they were raped as a young teenager, and I think this colored all their sexual experiences. Jordan and Kyle's relationship finally disintegrated because Jordan was pushing to be poly and was constantly trying to get with other people. But they would flip the fuck out when Kyle met someone else he wanted to date. Meanwhile, Jordan was dating a bunch of dudes, including two friends of mine. Jordan eventually accused both men of having been sexually aggressive toward them. There's not enough time to explain, so you'll have to trust me, but I know those guys well, and I'm sure that never happened. Jordan and Kyle finally broke up. Jordan starts telling their friends that Kyle sexually assaulted them throughout the relationship. They were intentionally vague and never corrected the people who assumed he raped them. Jordan would go to open mic poetry slams and share angry rants about their so-called sexually abusive ex and the violation of women's bodies. And because they're such an interesting person and skilled at writing poetry, Jordan formed a sympathetic community around themselves. Soon the hearsay had spread around town that Kyle was a rapist. Have his friends abandoned him without asking for his side. Kyle and I have since been roommates, we've continued to be best friends, and he's the most gentle, considerate person. No one else has accused him of being sexually aggressive, but this drama is still affecting him 4 years later. This brings me to my question. I've also been sexually assaulted multiple times, but I still hate it when I hear my fellow feminist friends say, "Believe women." I think this is why everyone believed Jordan without even asking Kyle for his side. If my friend opens up to me, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, but I think that blindly believing women can be really dangerous and counterproductive since Jordan was really the abuser. I feel a strong need to push back when I hear people say, "Believe women." How would you approach that conversation?
We do need to believe women. We need to believe women when they say that for too long, men have been able to sexually harass or assault them and get away with it and do so with absolute impunity. And that we need to believe women when they say that for millennia, any woman who came forward with allegations of sexual assault or harassment was instantly disbelieved. That was the default setting, not to take that seriously. Not only not to take it seriously, but to attack the woman who brought forward the charges. And it was a way of sending a signal to all other women out there who had been sexually assaulted or raped themselves that the cost of coming forward and reporting that was going to be so great that it wasn't worth it. And it was how the culture really moved to protect rapists and empower rapists. So we need to believe women when they collectively say that, and believe men who say that too. Believe women doesn't mean that women who are people, and people can be shitty, and shitty people are capable of lying, it doesn't mean that no woman could ever make a false allegation of sexual assault or sexual harassment or write a poem about it and make shit up or lie or mischaracterize at a slam. That's not what believe women means. If that's what believe women means, that's handing a lot of power to people, to individuals, and power can be abused. So when it comes to the collective, believe women when they talk about their reality, their shared experience, their collective experience, about the history of sexual assault and rape, yes, absolutely. When it comes to the individual, I believe myself that believe women should shift a bit and really mean take women seriously. Take these allegations seriously. Don't assume the default posture of not believing, of dismissing. Take it seriously. You can take seriously what this person, this non-binary person, had to say about their relationship with your friend, and you can make a critical judgment about the veracity of those allegations. You should scrutinize your own motives. Sometimes we don't want to think the worst about people that we like because not just because we like them and we're invested in them, but because it makes us doubt our own judgment. It implicates us as well, not just the person that this charge has been made against that we're, you know, attempting to weigh what we know of them versus what we know of these charges. And it's not enough to say, you know, this person is so kind and gentle. I don't think they'd ever be capable of doing that. People have said that about Donald fucking Trump. People have gone on television and said he's always been – men have gone on television and said he's always been a perfect gentleman to me. Men have gone on television to say effectively, he never grabbed my pussy, to get him off the hook. So you have to be a little self-critical. You have to interrogate your own motives, your own assumptions, your own biases. But if in the end you conclude that this isn't true, that is a conclusion that you can reasonably come to. If in every case of sexual assault you conclude that it is baseless, well, then you're a problem. You're part of the problem. So what do you do in this instance? Well, you continue to offer your friend who you believe has been falsely maligned your love and support and friendship, and he continues to move on from this and attempt to make new friends. And other than that, I don't know what can possibly be done because this person made these allegations that you believe to be untrue and it's going to spread like wildfire through your progressive community. that is something that, barring moving away, and even if he were to move away, it's going to follow him because of social media, he's never going to quite get past. He's just going to have to, unfortunately, sadly, live with and hopefully in time live down. We all have habits. We want to kick, but you don't have to set unrealistic goals to make positive changes in your life. There is no one-size-fits-all way to meet your goals. If you want a sustainable way to make a lasting change, try Talkspace. It's the most convenient and affordable way to get the support of a licensed therapist. Match with one of over 5,000 therapists based on your preferences from the privacy of your own device. Start messaging with your therapist the very same day via text, audio, picture, or video. Your therapist will provide ongoing guidance and support so you can make change at your own pace. It's like having an on-call personal trainer for your life, and you never need to go to an office or schedule appointments. Get your life back on track with Talkspace. It's the support you need to help achieve your goals at a price you can afford. And you get $100 off your first month when you use the code SAVAGE when you sign up. Don't wait for another year to go by. No matter what 2019 was like, set yourself up for success in 2020. Match with your perfect therapist today at Talkspace.com or download the mobile app. And don't forget to use the code SAVAGE, S-A-V-A-G-E, for $100 off your first month. That's Talkspace.com, promo code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm a trans queer male. I'm calling about my brother, who is in the relationship with a woman who is a severe alcoholic, who's had multiple instances where she's lashed out at him physically. She's been sober for about a month, but they're planning to get married in 5 months. And I don't know what to do. I've been trying to convince him to postpone the wedding. Obviously, I don't think he should be with her, but that never works. And it's just destroying our family. My parents are absolutely distraught. I'm still going to go to the wedding. I think they are too, if it's happening. But I'm really trying to convince him to just postpone the wedding at the very least. But I was looking for some advice as to what to do with someone that you care about who's in a really toxic, abusive relationship. Nothing I say seems to convince him to leave her. And I don't want to lose him or lose, you know, his connection with me. Was he already cut out a lot of the family and a lot of friends over this? And, you know, I feel like if I push him too hard that he'll pull away from me too.
For some reason, as I listen to your call, and I've gotten a lot of questions like yours over the years, the serenity prayer of all things popped to mind. And so I'm going to paraphrase the serenity prayer here. God grant me the serenity to prevent the marriages I can prevent, the courage to attend the weddings I can't stop, and the wisdom to know the difference. Speak your peace to your brother. It sounds like you've already spoken your peace to your brother. You advised him not to marry this woman at all, or at the very least, to delay the wedding, to push back the actual marriage, which is 5 months out. She's only a month sober. A lot can go south in 5 months. It may be that he's going to call the marriage off himself. But the appeal you can make to him is, if you're going to be together forever, if her sobriety is permanent, and if this is a healthy relationship, there's nothing about being together forever that waiting an extra year for her to prove to you that she's no longer going to be violent, no longer going to be a violent drunk, there's nothing about waiting that extra year that prevented you from being together forever. There is something ill-advised about rushing into a premature commitment and marrying someone who's 4 weeks sober, who has a history of drunken violence, is almost a textbook definition of a premature commitment. All that said, though, this is where the serenity prayer kicks in. Your brother's an adult, and there's nothing you can do in the end to stop him from setting his life on fire, if that's what you think he's doing. And he can't require you to sit there and toast marshmallows in the flames. You can attend the wedding because you support your brother, even if you don't support this marriage. But he doesn't have a right to demand that you change your mind about her or about this plan. You can object and love and support. And of course, as I always say, remind that person whose relationship or wedding plans you're objecting to that if they ever come around and they need out and they need help, you will not, I told you so, them when they reach out to you or if they ever have to reach out to you. So you don't want someone to hesitate to reach out to you for help getting out of a relationship you wanted to see them get out of because they fear being judged. And there are a lot of examples out there of people who stayed in abusive relationships or just shitty relationships they needed to get out of for an extra year or two, sometimes enough time to get pregnant and have a child, because they feared the shaming. They feared the I told you so's that they worried would come with perhaps the help. So let him know in advance. Always let somebody know in advance that when they ask for your help, they will get it. No I told you so's. Did you know if everyone in the United States bought just one used item instead of new, it would save nearly 6 billion pounds of carbon emissions? That's like taking 500,000 cars off the road for a whole year. The waste in the fashion industry is unacceptable, which is why thrifting is such a great way to replenish your wardrobe. It's better for the planet and your wallet, and it couldn't be easier with ThredUp. ThredUp is the world's largest online thrift store with up to 90% off estimated retail. You get at ThredUp insane deals, the insane deals of thrifting, but with the convenience of online shopping for all your favorite brands. Score Nike for only $6, Theory starting at $20, Lululemon for $27, J. Crew for $10, and more. Everything available at a fraction of the retail price. And today you can get an extra 30% off your first order at thredup.com/savage. And instead of digging for hours through the racks and thrift stores to do your part for the planet, you can customize your search on ThredUp by your size, style, and budget so you can find the best deals instantly. It is easy, so much easier than actual thrifting with all the deals of thrifting. Everything is in high quality condition and lots of items even have their tags still on. Plus, ThredUp gets new arrivals every minute, so there are always new treasures to find. Sustainable, stylish, affordable. Get there with ThredUp. And for Savage Lovecast listeners, here's that exclusive offer just for you. Get an extra 30% off your first order at ThredUp.com/savage. That's ThredUp.com/savage for 30% off your first order. Show your support for the planet. Show your support for the Savage Lovecast by going to ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off today. Terms apply.
Hi, and happy new year to Dan, Nancy, and the at-risk youth. This is a 35-year-old straight cisgender male in an East Coast city calling about a financial relationship question. So I have a friend who's maybe a decade younger than me, lives somewhere out in the Midwest. And over the summer, I lent her and her boyfriend some money because they were waiting for a settlement to come through. They just needed $20 to grab food stamps for the weekend. So I sent them $200 and said, go to town, have a good weekend. If you're okay, let me know later. Ever since then, pretty much toward the end of the month, every month it has been frequent social media postings. Oh, we need $50 for this. We need $20 for this. The settlement for my injury never came through. I'll never get the job, et cetera, et cetera. And it comes into private messages over my social media asking if there's any way I can help. And it just feels like the mounting drama is always a part of being friends with this person. And it feels like the financial need is always going to be a part of knowing this person. I reached out to my mother, who was in a very similar situation. She's down a couple grand from a Big Brother, Big Sister program that she had to cut that family off after 3 years when it proved that they're never going to be able to save a dime of whatever she lent them. And I feel the same way. If every part of me wants to help this person out however I can, because I know personally how hard and expensive in America it is to be broke and how hopeless it can be with a mental disorder and having landlords come at you for money. But it breaks my heart when I have to tell this person no. And I kind of just want validation of, am I right to cut the person off after a certain time or a certain dollar amount of, you can't keep coming to me every week because every month your landlord is threatening to kick you out, or every month you got disapproved for food stamps, or every month I know that I'm not being played. I heavily suspect I'm not being played, but it also breaks my heart to not be able to help this person out as frequently as I want to. What do you think I should do? Is it time to cut this person off, or should I just set up a weekly $20 donation, like a personal Patreon, just to give them a hand?
Usually when I get a financial relationship question these days, it's FinDom. This isn't FinDom. This is just opportunism. Some people think FinDom is a kind of opportunism, but I think this is opportunism on your friend's part. You asked, or they asked, if you could spare $20 to help them out with a little bit of food, and you sent $200 and told them to go to town. And they have gone to town on asks, on hitting you up for more and more money. When you sent the $200, in addition to the money, you sent a message that you were very generous and that you had money to spare and that you could make it rain, as they say. And so they've continued to hit you up for money. I think you need to reassess this friendship, because they live in a different city. You only hear from them when they want money. How much of a friendship is this right now? And is it worth it to you to keep them in your life, if having them in your life just means these asks, these requests, and the guilt and anxiety that these requests and these asks, at the rate they come in and how predictable they are at this point, causes you? It sounds to me like the answer is no. It sounds to me like you're calling, seeking permission to end this relationship, to cut these folks off. You have my permission. You have been more than generous for a long time. And in that time, they should have done whatever it is they needed to do to get themselves into a position where they wouldn't have to be hitting up a generous friend in the way that they've been hitting you up. So tell them you have no more money to spare. Tell them you wish them well. Tell them you hope that they can get it together, but you are tapped out. DoorDash has something for every lifestyle. On the go, with no time to waste, order, pick up, and skip the line. Having trouble organizing a meal with your friends? DoorDash makes it easy with group ordering. DoorDash, it's more than just delivery. DoorDash brings all of America's flavors to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be delivered to you wherever you are. Not only is your favorite pizza joint probably already on DoorDash, but there are over 310,000 restaurant partners in 4,000 cities, so you can find a new favorite too. With door-to-door delivery in all 50 U.S. states, Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can order from your local go-tos or choose from your favorite chain restaurants. With DoorDash, you'll never have to worry about your next meal. And right now, our listeners get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and remember to enter the code SAVAGE. That's $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter the code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth. I was calling in regard to women's libidos in a long-term relationship versus men's. And I know at one point in time I heard Dan say something on the podcast about how women tend to lose interest earlier in a relationship than men do. It's getting to be a long-term relationship. We've been together for 4 years, and I'm at a point where I have to really work to get myself in the mood to want to be with my partner. And, you know, we used to have sex, like most people in the beginning of a relationship, like almost every time we saw each other. And so, you know, multiple times a week, like probably 5 times a week at least. And I'm just wondering, it seems like, you know, he's always in the mood and he's always wanting to be with me. And we've just... So we're kind of in this different point, and I'm wondering what the science is behind physiology, and if there is any research as to long-term relationships with a heterosexual couple, and if there's a difference in libido.
Joining me by phone to help tackle this question, Dr. Wednesday Martin, number one New York Times bestselling author and social researcher. Her most recent book, Untrue, went into the science behind this, dispelling myths about women and monogamy and desire and infidelity, and making the recent science on this topic accessible and relevant and hilarious and delicious. Hey, Wednesday Martin, Dr. Martin, how are you?
Hi, Dan Savage. How are you? Thanks for having me on. Oh, my gosh. This woman is living in the sweet spot of the female sexual conundrum. She's so typical.
Or the unsweet spot, because it doesn't sound like she's
or
very happy
either. Or the unsweet spot. Yeah, let's call it the unsweet spot, and let's get her back in the zone. The first thing I notice, I always pay attention to people's language. She says she has to work to get herself in the mood, right? Mm-hmm. And I just want to say that's sort of the root of the conundrum, and what I love about her is she's not pathologizing herself for it, or her partner, or her relationship. A lot of women go to this place of, it's work to want to have sex with my male partner. Something must be wrong with him, or something must be wrong with me, or there must be something wrong with our relationship. That's where a lot of women go. I love that she's not doing that to herself, and she is 100% right, because in fact, she's completely normal.
Right, right. But the culture tells people, you know, in every dumb magazine and, you know, every previously, you know, in the past, every Oprah guest, what we're told that if you love someone and you're really connected, you're going to want to fuck that person all the time, forever, for 60 years, without any drop off in libido. And the reality is very different than that. And then people.
The reality is very different for that, especially for women.
And people encounter that, the difference in that reality. And of course, they pathologize their relationships, because everything they've been told about how relationships work is a lie.
That's right. So the whole mythology that if you love your partner, you're going to want to have sex with them forever, that is just one of the biggest lies of Western culture. And you and I know that. And she is starting to see that, if she doesn't know it already. But she's framing it as, is this a difference in libido? And this is how most people approach this. When women start getting bored in a relationship, most people say, sure, what do you expect? Men have stronger libidos than women. And this is how she's framing it, right? Mm-hmm. And I love that she's asking it as a question. And the short answer to her question is no, there is not a difference in libido. And there's a lot of scientific kerfuffle around this that doesn't matter to her. Here's what really does matter to her. When we measure female desire correctly, male and female desire are not that discrepant from one another. Here's the real discrepancy. Women get bored in long-term monogamous cohabiting relationships sooner than men do. Boom. I said it. That like goes against the script that we have been spoon-fed since we were children. Mm-hmm. We're always taught that men, whether they're gay or straight, are total sex bunnies. They're energizer bunnies. Take them down off the shelf. They want to fuck all the time. And women are retiring and coy and reticent and choosy. There has been a revolution in the science about female sexuality, and nobody's been listening. And what that revolution taught us was women get bored sooner. We have longitudinal study after longitudinal study. Dietrich Klussmann's two German studies, Annika Gunt's study in Finland, Cynthia Graham's study in the UK of over 11,000 adults, Kristen Mark's study in the US of over 3,000 adults that all found the same thing. Women, on average, get bored between years 1 and 4, and they are much more likely to report that it impacts their desire to have sex and their likelihood of stepping out and finding a new partner.
So what does this mean then? Does this mean we should all just be serial monogamous and we should, you know, end it after 2 years, whatever it is, and move on? And also, like what you said about men are the sex energizer bunnies on the shelf and just take them down and they want to fuck. And women, you know, are more reserved or less horny. That's kind of true. But it's not that women are less horny. It's just that they're going to get less horny in a long-term relationship sooner than men get less horny, yes, in that long-term relationship.
Here's what happens, and Dietrich Klussmann said this years ago, but all these other researchers that I mentioned have said it as well, and it's all in my book Untrue and my article in The Atlantic called Women, the Bored Sex. If we were to look at what happens to male desire over time in a long-term cohabiting relationship, we would see it ebbing really slowly over the course of 9 or 10 years. Slowly, 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 the guy wants to have sex with his female partner less. But it's a slow, slow, long process. If we were looking at what happens to female desire over 9 or 10 years in a long-term long-term cohabiting monogamous relationship, between years 1 and 4, Dan, we would see her desire dropping like a steel ball out of the sky and tumbling down to the inner depths of hell.
Okay, this is so depressing. This is like so depressing for opposite sex couples. Like, I wish everybody could be gay so that, you know, the two people in the relationship were always on the same page about desire.
Wouldn't that be good?
How is this not just an engine for endless conflict and those opposite sex relationships that never work out?
This is the good news here. There is something called psychoeducation, which is what you and I are doing right now, which we are giving people the facts. When we tell heterosexual men and women, yeah, your girlfriend or your wife or your partner turns off between years 1 and 4, and it's not your fault, and it's not her fault, and it's not about the relationship, it's that contrary to everything you've been taught, women need variety and novelty and adventure in the aggregate more than men do. Think about the way that's going to set people free.
Mm-hmm.
Think about all the men, the heterosexual men, who are going to stop thinking, this is about my dick, this is about my wallet, this is about something I'm doing wrong. Think about all the heterosexual women who are going to be able to stop saying, oh no, I turned into my mother, I don't like sex, I'm a typical woman with a low libido. No, you're a typical woman who, you haven't gone off sex. You've gone off sex with the same person over and over and over and over and over again within 1 to 4 years because you were a normal human woman being a normal human woman. There's science to prove it. Now, what can you do? You want to know?
Serial monogamy, relationship to relationship,
fuck other people.
You
have so many options. Some people are going to think that you and I are crazy to promote or support people who decide not to be monogamous. And for those people, the answer might be, hey, have your boyfriend act like a total stranger that you've never met before.
Yes.
Go to a sex party and just watch. You don't have to do anything. Get into the porn that you like.
I'm always saying that to people. Like, you were the adventure that they were on at the beginning of the relationship, and they were the adventure you were on a year or more into the relationship. You're not the adventure each other is on anymore. You have to go on adventures together as a pair. You have to create.
And listen, heterosexual man, this is on you. Your wife or female partner has a thirst for the new that you cannot even understand until you're at year 10 or 11, and she's starting to feel it at year 1 or 4. What can you do to make yourself new and interesting and exciting to your female partner? And I would say just ask over and over and don't expect her to tell you the first time. And eventually, she's going to cop that variety and novelty and adventure would get her going again.
Although some women don't cop to that because they don't realize it, because they just are, they struggle with this false consciousness. They just believe they have no libido. They believe they're damaged or broken. And, you know, I've seen this for years. I've talked about it with other sex researchers, that the women will come into, you know, clinics and their marriages will be on the line. They have no libido. You know, their husband's ready to leave them. And then their husband leaves them and they're horny again because now they can fuck somebody else.
Yes. Exactly. They're like, whoa, you're somebody new. Who the hell are you that you just like that woman was just flirting with you so hard, or like that you looked at that person and got turned on? Okay, so what can we say? What is the thing that tends to happen? The woman starts feeling lower desire between years 1 and 4 because he's the same old, same old. Sorry, no offense. Then what does she start to do? Oh, I don't like sex, but I need to have sex to make him happy. Instead of seeking out variety and novelty and adventure.
And then she's going through the motions, having sex she doesn't enjoy, which becomes a negative feedback loop and self-reinforcing, and dread sets in.
Yes, and let's call it what Marta Miana, the sex researcher, and what sex researchers call it. They call it service sex. It's as horrible as it sounds. Service sex. You're doing it in the service of somebody else's desire instead of your own. Women have to stop feeling like service sex is their life sentence.
Okay, there's a lot of people out there.
It's not.
In monogamous relationships who probably right now feel like we're attacking them or attacking monogamy. We're not.
And we're not.
We're saying
supporting them.
Be in a monogamous committed relationship and you want it to be happy and you want sex to be a part of it, or sex is, and sex is really important. People end monogamous relationships all the time because the sex isn't there anymore and the sex isn't working for them. So no sex is a threat to your monogamous relationship. You have to control for boredom. You have to, even if you're not going to fuck anybody else, you have to do something that's exciting and different and new. You have to create other forms of variety in the context of that monogamous relationship.
Yep. I so agree with everything that you said. And I think that one of the ways to frame this, particularly for women, given that women are the ones who get bored sooner, is feel entitled to something better than service sex. Don't just, when you feel yourself in that spiral of surrender where you're having sex to please your male partner, that's when you say to your male partner, I don't want to have service sex anymore.
Well,
what else can we do?
Say, I'm bored. People are really afraid of saying that to their partner they've been having sex with for a long time. They're afraid their partner's going to freak out if they look at them and tell the truth.
So let them blame us.
I'm bored. And so and we need to shake this up. That's what my, you know, circling back to the caller, you know, she's in this long-term relationship. You need caller. You need to go to your partner, your husband, boyfriend, whatever it was, I don't remember. And you need to say to him, I'm bored. We need to fix that together. And that's going to mean a more sexy and exciting life for both of us, where I want to have sex too, but we need to get out of this apartment. We need to get out of this bedroom. We need to get out of this bed. We need to get out of this rut and this routine. And we need to challenge ourselves. Even if we're not fucking other people, we need to make this exciting again in a way that it was effortlessly exciting at the start. We need to now expend some effort making it exciting for me again, or it's going
to
fall apart.
Yes. Yes, and just keep that term service sex in your head and remember that it doesn't feel good to give it and it doesn't feel good to get it. It's service sex doesn't serve anyone, and excitement is your evolutionary heritage and right if you're female and sexual.
Dr. Wednesday Martin, pick up her book, Untrue. Anybody who is interested in or indicted by the conversation we just had is going to want to read Untrue and, of course, listen to Dr. Martin's podcast. Thank you so much for coming on. I always love chatting with you.
Thanks, Dan. You're the best. Keep on.
Dr. Martin and I, we kept talking, and you can hear the rest of our conversation on the Magnum version of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. All right, before we get to your response calls, your comments about the show, let's read your tweets. Kaylin Coy tweets, wine drunk with my lady friends talking about the importance of maintaining adventure in our relationships. After listening to the Savage Lovecast for the past 3+ years, I feel more than prepared for this conversation. Thank you, Dan. You're welcome, Kaylin. Please give my regards to your wine drunk friends. Maddie Ritter tweets, listening to @FakeDanSavage's Savage Lovecast during a ride share with evangelical Christians to keep me grounded and to stop me from saying anything at all. Glad we could be there for you, Maddie. I hope you survived that ride. Also kind of hoping your headphones slipped out and the show started playing for all to hear. And finally, Rebecca Jeschke tweets, oh, @FakeDanSavage, we at EFF are huge fans and are thrilled you talked about the risks of ring cameras on your podcast, but you got our name wrong, frowny face emoji. We are the Electronic Frontier Foundation, not the Electronic Freedom Foundation. 3 heart emojis. I am so sorry about that, Rebecca. Please relay my apologies to everyone at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, @EFF on Twitter. Everyone, please go follow them. And while we're on the subject of last week's opening show rant, it was a mistake for me to screw up EFF's name. Also a mistake for me to urge listeners to throw away any ring devices they may have already installed in their bedrooms or on their front doors. We don't need more high-tech gadgets going into landfills or other waste streams. And right now, Ring says they're working to improve security, which has been terrible up to this point. So maybe we can just put any Ring devices we currently own back in their boxes until the security situation improves. In the meantime, anyone who's thinking about buying a Ring camera should go to EFF.org and read what to know before you buy or install your Amazon Ring camera. All right, them's the tweets. If you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the #SavageLovecast. And now your response calls.
Hi, Dan. This is a response to the caller in episode 694 who was wondering if she should try and be fuck buddies with her ex. I just want to say, don't do it. I want to underline what you said to her and let her know that I was there and I did fuck my ex and it drew it out for 2 years and it was painful. And now, when I think of him, even though we had 2 great years together, I have nothing but bitter memories, and I think of him now as a user and an abuser, and it destroyed anything good that I could have taken from that relationship. So I would strongly advise her not to do that, and also to say that she feels like it was the best sex she'll ever have, but she has to realize that she was 50% of that sexual connection with her ex, and she will find that again. She's bringing that into the world. I found better sex than I had with my first love, the best sex of my life since that relationship. So I think if she has one goal for her 30th year, it's just to not fuck that man.
Run, run, run. That is my advice for the gal in episode 694 who's dealing with the ex-husband who is still very much tethered to the ex-wife, and she's the girlfriend. Sweetheart, you will always come in third, fourth, or fifth, depending on how many children he has. That is a mother of his children. She likely holds all the cards, and unless you are willing to accept your point in the pecking order, this is going to be an issue. Don't step parent in a situation like that. It is a nightmare. You ultimately end up putting yourself last almost all the time. And not only is it a horrifying ego hit, it's a horrifying soul hit. You are worth more than that. And that drama will never go away.
Hey, Dan. I'm calling about the guy in episode 694 whose girlfriend was homeschooled and raised as a Christian. I, too, was raised by hateful Jesus. My first serious boyfriend was atheist and read the New York Times. I kept my ignorant mouth shut and learned compassion and love by his example of being a decent person. I had voted for Bush in 2000, and by 2004, I switched political parties forever. I went back to school and got a BA in Black Studies, and now I'm gearing up for a PhD with a focus on white American Christianity and the hate that it perpetuates. Just wanted to share my experience and give the caller hope. There are thousands of us hot ex-bigots out there that were influenced by good and decent people.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or comment for a future show, give us a buzz, 206-302-2064. Or even better, you can record your question or comment on your smartphone and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. There is a special place in Nancy's heart for listeners who keep their questions under 3 minutes. It's right next to the special place in Nancy's heart for hosts who keep their responses under 10 minutes. My Dirty Little Porn Film Festival Hump is in Oakland, Los Angeles, Miami this weekend and next. Head over to humpfilmfest.com to get tickets and find out where else we're heading this spring. Follow Dr. Wednesday Martin on Twitter at Wednesday Martin. Follow me on Twitter at Fake Dan Savage. Follow the Electronic Frontier Foundation on Twitter at EFF. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian, and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. I'll be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.